Hello, everyone, and welcome down to episode 115 of the Down South Photo Show with me, Brendan Waits, here in Ocean Grove, Victoria, Australia. And the guy on your other screen or in your other ear down in Hobart, Tasmania, Australia, it's Cam Blake. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, Brendan. You make me laugh every time we do this because just before you press record, what was it today? I haven't even looked at the notes. Bugger it. Let's just press record.
Let's just get into a show. We know what we're doing. We're 115 episodes in. We should know what we're doing by now.
Surely 115 episodes in, we've got over 800 subscribers.
We're getting there. We are getting there. We're clawing our way tooth and nail to 800 because our wonderful people who subscribe and watch and share the channel around are doing a great job of doing just that. So thank you very much to all our loyal followers, listeners. And if you're new to the show, well, sit back, relax, and let us do all the talking as we dissect another interesting photographic topic on the show tonight.
There's actually, this week's been a bit of an interesting one. We've got a few topics there. That are quite interesting. We might not get through all of them, but there's a few things going on in the photographic world, and it is good to see. But yeah, big shout out to everyone. Thank you. If you haven't subscribed, make sure you subscribe. It doesn't cost anything. It's free. We're not going to bombard you with bullshit apart from the show. You know, you just got to subscribe you'll get a notification every week. It's good.
Exactly. There's a big old subscribe button just hanging down there somewhere going probably over that way.
If we had the technology, we'd probably pop it up here on the screen. Press it here.
Hey, mate. Can I just say, 2 weeks ago when we said I was going to put a card on the screen, that actually worked.
Yeah, it did. So did anyone click on it?
I don't know. Even know if I can tell if anyone clicked on it. But the main thing is, it was there.
The start. I'll tell you what. I was actually very surprised it was there. You did well.
If you're listening to the show on the podcast channels, thank you. Welcome aboard. We do encourage you to pop over to the YouTube channel occasionally to have a look at our backgrounds or if we throw up photos, particularly when our comps are decided as well, to jump on and have a look at the winning comp photos. Speaking of, how's that for a segue? Our March comp is well and truly up and running.
It is.
And the theme is Blue Hour. I think we've hit something like 60 or 70 entries already. Thank you, everyone, for commenting. And the way you enter your Blue Hour photo is via our Facebook page, which is linked right below.
Yeah, I'm looking through the entries again. We said it last week. It's going to be hard.
Yep.
There is some great shots. There's some beautiful moon shots. There's some... yeah, mountain shots. There's some, what else we got? Some sort of modern architecture shots, some coastal shots. We've got a lot of cool stuff in here.
Yeah.
That's going to be hard. That's a nice one. That one on the
pier. Wouldn't it be awesome if we put out a calendar of all our monthly themes? We could put a calendar together.
And then we take the profits and just screw everyone else over.
Yeah. Well, we did all the work. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We'll say photo taken by. Do the right thing.
We'll give them credit.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because photographers can live on credit, right?
Yeah, that pays the bills.
That was a topic from a previous episode.
Yes, it was.
Backgrounds, Cameron, pushing right along.
I'll go first.
Go on.
Why not? So this shot is from a plane on the way back from the southwest of Tasmania the other week. And in the foreground, you've got DeWitt Island, DeWitt Island, which is part of the Matsaika Island Group, which has Australia's most southernest lighthouse on Matsuka Island. And it's actually manned. You can actually go and spend 6 months there on this tiny, it's one of those little tiny islands out the back. You can spend 6 months there looking after the lighthouse, doing weather reports for the Bureau. I think they've got a veggie patch you've got to keep going, but it is totally isolated. And they get the full brunt of the southwest squalls that come through. It's not unusual for them to have in excess of 130, 140K gusts there on a regular basis. But we flew over it the other day, just had a nice bit of light on that little island there. And it was a beautiful little flight home. It got a little bit bumpy closer to Hobart, but we went along the coast and, it was like shooting fish in a barrel. Just point the camera out the window and, away we went. There's a little bit of cropping, a little bit of straightening up of horizons and things like that. But yeah, it's a great little flight home, and I'm actually going off there tomorrow. I head back. Oh, look at me, I'm really bright. We go back down there tomorrow, actually. So
can you do me a favor and cover your face again? Because I just want to have another look at that awesome background of yours. Yeah. How good's the light on the peak, basically right in the middle?
Yeah, that's what caught my eye. I'm like, oh, that's good. It's just wasn't much, but it was just enough light to, I guess, make a bit of a difference on that peak, give it a bit of form.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the rest of it in the background, like there's actually an island all the way at the back as well, right on the horizon in the haze. It's a really cool, dramatic flight home along that coastline. But yeah, when I saw that light, that's exactly what I caught. So when I shot this, I usually shoot things about a stop under on my exposure. So aperture priority, I think I was shooting like at 5.6 ISO, maybe 400 along the way. And then I had a set to minus one, purely just to keep those little bits of light that are catching the hills and stuff, just to keep them a bit under control. It just makes your editing a bit easier when you get back. But yeah, it was a really cool flight. It's a great little spot. So I do like it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's yeah. got, it does, reek of the, it does reek of the Three Capes, doesn't it? That well, whole coastline.
Yeah. It's not far really. Like no. as the crow flies, it's on the same sort of, I don't know, it's latitude or whatever it is. So,
yes.
Yeah. But it is an amazing flight and, lucky enough to get to do it again tomorrow. It looks like the weather's going to be okay.
Brilliant.
We were flying back the other day. So these guys fly by line of sight. They don't use instrument flight. So you've got to be able to see, I think it's 5 nautical miles. They've got to be able to see. So they usually take us back over inland to get back to Hobart, but it was a bit cloudy. So we came back along the coast and I'm okay in small planes. I think I said this before. I get a little bit nervy. I get a bit sweaty if you go bumpy, bumpy, but overall I'm okay. And then we're flying along the coast and then I was expecting them to keep sort of flying over the water, just keep going around the contours of the coast. And the pilot's like, oh, it looks like we can go over that mountain. Let's just go over there. He started climbing up to 5,000 feet. And I'm like, all right, we're climbing up. Everything's getting smaller, smaller. And we get over the top of this peak. It's stunning, like right next to the peak. So it was really, really beautiful. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. It's not bumpy at all. It's really good. And then all of a sudden, like all of us heads hit the roof, like boom, you know, bang. Oh. I'm like, oh, okay. And then there's another one. Oh, I'm like, okay, breathe, just keep breathing. It's okay. Just look at the horizon. And then the pilot came on. He goes, this, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call mountain waves. So the air hits the mountains and creates waves. Yeah. And we're riding those waves down the other side. And as soon as he put that in my head, I'm like, oh, okay, so we're surfing. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine.
It's just in a tin can at 4,000 feet above.
What could possibly go wrong?
No. So it was fun. It was fun. But yeah, sometimes the ride home's a bit bumpy. But if you concentrate out the window, the scenes are beautiful anyway, so you don't get too much. Yeah. How about yours? Yours looks like it might be in a forest somewhere.
Yeah, so this is in the lovely Otways, which is on my doorstep, so a great part of the world, the Great Otway National Park, and that is Triplet Falls, which is in this similar area to Hopetoun Falls, which I had as my background a couple of weeks ago. Great spot, particularly when you do get a bit of rain. So those falls right now would not be flowing really much at all, but when you do get a few showers and it hits pretty quick too, those falls really kick off and flows down all the way down through the Otways. You get these awesome waterfalls, and that's Triplet Falls. You can access it with a relatively easy walk, a few boardwalks and stuff national parks have put in, and the lookout, we're talking about this off air, it's one of those lookouts that it's a bit tricky because the falls are more obscured than they are in view. But you'll notice that it actually makes for pretty much the perfect background as I come back on sea. So I'm just like, right, where the trees are. So
yeah, well, you
waterfalls.
You purposely framed it that way, no doubt.
That's right, because I knew I'd be using it as a background here on the show.
That's what I do. Every shot I do now is how would this look as a background on the show?
Yeah. If you want tech specs, it's actually shot on a Nikon D5300. I took this quite a while ago. Right. With a Sigma, 10 to 20. This is the camera that we gave away on the channel last year.
Right. That's right. And the lens that was cemented to the front of the camera.
That's right. And David Clark, Froggy, sent it over to him in Tasmania. Actually, he won it. So, and you're looking at circular polarizer. I'm going to say I shot that at around F11.
Half a second, maybe.
Gave me that beautiful poppy green on the foliage there, and of course enabled me to slow the shutter down a wee bit to get a bit of movement on the water. It's a fairly traditional sort of exposure for a waterfall.
If you're not using a circular polarizer on your landscape photography, why the hell not?
That's right. You should give it a go.
You should give it a go. Go buy one. They're not stupidly expensive.
At the very least, give it a go. If not, give use it all the bloody time.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. It's not a drone shot. You didn't put the drone up or something like that in the national park.
Cameron, please.
Oh, sorry.
Cameron, what's our first topic for discussion?
Which one are we picking?
The first one that's there.
Okay, yes. I this one came up. I've seen a few shots around lately, and you see them all the time. And you look at it and you go, all right, I'm calling bullshit. There's no way that flower was in the front of that frame, or, you know, there's a perfectly placed object of something that you're like, there's no way that was naturally there. So yep. The topic is, should you place items in your landscape scenes to make it more interesting? Now, I've got a classic story to tell, and it's going to get me in trouble because this person I'm going to mention, we still have an issue with this. It's an ongoing feud. But this is a classic example of putting stuff in your scenes that makes it more interesting. So there's a story, Liffey Falls, a bit like your one behind, a beautiful set of waterfalls here in Tassie. And I was doing a workshop with Seng Ma, good friend of the show, Seng, who runs Venture Photography Tours out of WA. Jump on, have a look if you want to go. He goes to India, he goes overseas, goes to these amazing places. Lovely guy, does great workshops. But I think I caught him putting something in his scene to make it look more interesting at Liffey Falls on one of our workshops. And I came down and I had half the group at one little bit of the falls and he had the other half down the bottom. And I came down and there was this beautiful fern, like the fern behind you, like one of those fern prongs, just sitting in front of the waterfall, like on the rocks, just where the water was cascading. And I walked straight up. I said, bullshit, that was not there. That has been put there. You found it on the side. You've moved it into your frame. And he's like, no, I didn't. And I'm like, and one of the customers like, totally threw him in the deep end. So I picked up the fern and I threw it out of his scene. I said, you don't do that. That's cheating, you know? And wow, did we get into a debacle? there was no cut lunches thrown, but from all reports, he's still not happy about me doing that. And I'm to this day saying, I'm still not happy he put the fern in his shot and he took the fern out. So what are your thoughts, Brendan? Should you, or could, do you personally, are you one of these people that will put things in your scene to make them look interesting, or do you try and shoot them how you found them?
Yeah, so I have done it before. I've got a hand on heart, be very honest and say that I have done it before. In fact, one of the photos that I did it with was published in the Herald Sun.
No.
So yeah, I think I've told this story before on the show.
I don't know if you, remind me, I can't remember.
Yeah, so it was quite a while ago. Jeez, maybe 12 years ago. Yeah, it would have been, because my son was actually, goodness me, 14 years ago. I was on a bit of a road trip with the fam, very young fam at that time, and I had my boy Harvey was in my backpack. So we had one of those back harnesses, you know, that you carry yes. a baby around in. So
yeah.
He was sitting up in there and the sun was setting. We're at a place called Yanaki, which is just to the north of Wilson's Prom, just before you enter Wilson's Prom National Park, Yanaki, Yanaki. And
yes. yep.
beautiful sunset was happening, but the beach was pretty boring. It was just a, you know, just a line of beach. I was looking for foreground. There was nothing in the foreground. Beautiful colors.
Yeah.
So I looked up to my right and here's a upturned little fishing boat.
I think I do remember this story. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
like a little punt.
Yes.
And I'm sort of looking around. I'm like, oh, that'd be nice if it looked like that was just landed on the beach. So of course I went over and looked at it. It was so small. And I sort of picked it up. I was like, oh, I can flip this over. So I just flipped it over, dragged it into position, framed up my shot, got the shot, flipped it back up the right way, dragged it back where it was.
Mm. And then took credit with the Herald Sun.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I don't have an issue with where I do draw the line. I would say though is obviously disturbing foliage in a national park. I mean, you're not do that. You don't do that.
And that's not what happened. Like, that's not happened with our one. We're saying it was just a bit of fern that was on the ground.
Yeah, look,
but breaking off stuff, that would be an absolute no-no.
Oh yeah, no, none of that. I mean, I've been known to stage the odd image, but I'd say it's more of a exception than a rule for me. Mm. I reckon, I'll tell you what was brilliant at when we're at Mount Field National Park this is last year now. Goodness me, where does the time go? Nearly a year ago, Cam, can you believe that?
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course, we were there in autumn and all the fungi. So there was little toadstools and mushrooms all over the place. And the amount of times where they just weren't quite in the right spot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you just wanted to move them, but of course you can't. They're rooted in place for one.
Yeah.
And two, you'd be destroying, you know, so I'd never do anything like that. But I can't justify people doing that. I will say though, you know, if I'm traveling, let's say, for example, I go to Canada in the autumn, which is world famous for its autumn colors.
Yeah.
And I'm at a famous waterfall, for example, and, you know, it was looking fantastic. And I had the perfect composition, but there was a rock in front of me and it just was killing my comp. Would I pick up a leaf off the ground and sit it on the rock? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'd probably exhaust every other avenue first, though. I'd probably keep looking for compositions to try and get it. The point I'm making here is, you know, I may never be back there again to take that scene. So I'd be very tempted to set stuff up.
Yeah.
I'm not against it. I've got to say, I'm not against it. But yeah, there's a line. There's definitely a line.
I do what you want with your own photos. That's the thing. I like what I say, it means nothing. Yeah. And people go do their own thing and I do my own thing. That's fine. What I love about landscape photography, and this is where I sort of get my knickers in a knot about it a bit, is that to me, landscape photography is about trying to find those just perfect moments with absolutely zero interruption from us. And that's where sometimes, you know, like that, you know, you're talking about Canada and that rock, you know, yeah, it would be great if there was autumn leaves all sprinkled over that rock.
Yeah.
But if there's not, like that to me is, okay, where's the challenge? How do I find that spot that works and doesn't work? I find that some people get a little bit, I think it's a bit of an addiction as well. I think a lot of people find they do it once or twice and they go, oh, well, that's fine. That looked really good.
Well, it's easy, isn't it?
It's easy. I can just put stuff in every shot now. And, you know, they come away, oh, I walked into the bloody whoop and went into these mountains and found this amazing composition with this, you know, whatever. I'm like, but you didn't. You walked into the mountains, yes, and then you made a scene up. You made a studio, you know, you made your own studio work for you.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, like I said, do what you like, but every now and then I see a few things flick up on my socials and like, oh, there's no way that was perfectly placed like that.
Yeah, but the thing is though, Cam, unless you're told otherwise, you got to take their word for it, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. Yes.
I mean, unless you're told otherwise, that's just unless how it is. Well, that's, there's no proof. True. I mean, you can't, you know, and like you said before, and I'm the same, do what you want with your photos. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah.
Where I have an issue is if it's blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't say, oh, you know, what does it make it any easier for you to swallow if they do admit to putting stuff in the scene, like if it was hand manipulated?
Well, yeah, you know what? Yeah, it does. It completely changes my outlook of that photo then.
Yeah.
So, for example,
well, because you're still creating an image, right?
Well, to me, yeah, like if you came to me and said, hey, I went to Canada, went to this waterfall, you know, this waterfall is great. And you know what? Just to make it a bit more colorful, I put some things on these rocks in the foreground and made it look a bit nice. I'd be like, cool, that's a great vision, great artistic use of your own visualization of the shot. But if you just put it up there and go, oh, how cool is this shot? And I look at it and go, oh, I don't know. I reckon they might have been put there. No, that's how I found them. No, it's not. You're full of it. So I don't mind if people admit to it. Because to me, I think, that's not a natural shot. It's a little bit like Photoshop. Like you're adding something to a photo.
Exactly what I was going to say.
That wasn't there.
Yeah, it's like manual Photoshop, isn't it?
It is like manual Photoshop. So, which is fine. But I just see it a lot these days where people put up these huge landscape scenes and straight away, like there's no way that was there.
Yeah.
And it's like, then there's this beautiful story about how they got in there or they did this or they did that.
Yeah.
And they just leave out the bit. Then, by the way, I put that gnarly old branch over the rock perfectly lined up like a heart. Yeah. You know, like all those stupid things like that. So, I just thought
it's funny, isn't it? Because on the other side of the argument or the other side of the coin is, you know, when you genuinely do stumble on the scene and those autumn leaves are there, or no in Sam's case, well, that's right. The fern is there.
Yeah.
No one believes you. So does it really matter at all? You know,
I think I'm getting old, Brendan. I think I'm just getting old. And
I guarantee you, you're getting older.
I'm getting older. No, I don't know. I'm just a very much a purist photographer. So that's such a thing, where I like to just shoot things as I see them.
Yeah,
and I think that's, to me, in my opinion, I think that's the true challenge of landscape photography, by just using naturally what you've got there.
Yeah,
I just see it more and more and more these days, and I've seen it a few times in competitions too, where like things are in the foreground where you're just like, that's bullshit. That's no way that was there. If that was there, that was the luckiest find in the universe. And how
many lucky finds can there be? And if it constantly keeps showing up now,
exactly.
I completely understand your argument. And I think also if I'm for example, you know, camped out somewhere and I'm sort of scouting for shots just close to my tent, or you know, in a fairly small area, that makes it a bit more challenging as well to not do that, you know, to not start creating shots.
Yeah.
Particularly if you've got like hours to kill and you just want to get some really cool landscape shots. Well,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't care. I don't mind if people do that. Do they have to tell me that they did it? Maybe, but will I ever know either way? Probably not. So it's sort of a moot point in the end, isn't it? So
yeah, it's just me being grumpy.
not at all. You never.
Come never.
Do you know, have you ever heard of the very, very famous American comedian, Stephen Wright?
Yeah, Mr. I don't have any emotions and I just talk like this the whole
time. That's him, yeah. He had a brilliant joke about photography.
Did he?
Yeah, he said, I went to a friend's place and there was all these photos on the fridge, and he pointed to one of them and said, oh, that's a photo of me when I was younger. And I said to him, aren't all photos of you when you're younger?
That's true. That's true.
Love it. I love it.
We're a weird breed, photographers, aren't we? We're definitely different. Like, you look at photographers and then you compare them. Like, musicians are always a bit weird. You know, they've always got their creative bit. Artists are a bit weird. I guess we're all weird in our own little way. But photographers, I think, are just, we're on a different level.
There's a lot going on. And all you have to do is look back past the last 114 episodes of this show to show there's a lot going on.
Yes.
Like all the topics we talk about, it generally, you know, it always sort of sums up photographers, you know, and there's always controversy and there's always nitpicking, and you know, it's just, unfortunately, it's part and parcel of human.
So we're both just grumpy shits then.
Yeah, probably.
But I don't know.
We're really grumpy? Comment below.
Well, I'd like to actually know what people's thoughts are on the placement of things, because
I'm
sure people watching have done it, and I'm sure people watching maybe not have done it. So I'd love to know if people actually do think it's okay. Like, if you're at a scene, are you happy to put something in that scene to maybe emphasize or, you know, increase the beauty of that shot? Or are you one of these people like me where like, no, I'm not touching it. That's how I found it. That's how I leave it.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know what people's thoughts are on that.
Yeah, me too. It'd be interesting because I think you'd, well, okay. One, leave a comment about what you think about it. Two, hand on heart, be honest and tell us if you've done it before.
Dob yourself in. We won't make fun of you.
No, I think it's an interesting topic. And it's funny because I always keep thinking about, and it's probably because you mentioned it before, like waterfalls.
Mm.
Because waterfalls are always, you know, they're great to photograph, but generally speaking, they've got a fairly ordinary foreground unless you can place yourself in the river or, you know, which we don't recommend you do, particularly not in national parks, blah, blah, blah. You know, and quite often you're missing out on foreground. And there's a very good YouTube photographer who only this week put up a tutorial on how to blend two completely different images, like not only taken at different locations, but taken like in different hemispheres. And he showed how to blend your photos, but not just to blend them, also to color balance them.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was an interesting exercise. And of course, at the very end of it, he just sort of sat back and went, so this is all cheating, and that's how you cheat. So
well, this is the thing as well. Like, again, if we compare ourselves to other arts, as we're going totally off topic, but that's us. Ourselves to other arts, you know, like music's got the auto cue thing where people make their voice sound, but generally speaking, it's still a song that has to be sung and made. Painters, they have to paint. You can't just fake paint, to speak. But in photography, we've got tools galore to make things up. Like, we've got a complete untapped creative license about what we can do.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, same with digital design and artists like that. Like, we can do anything and it's always accepted.
Yeah, which rolls just eloquently and beautifully into that next topic that we wanted to talk about tonight, because I wanted to bring this up purely because it's a hot topic.
Okay, first question though.
Yes.
Is she dead?
So what we're talking about is the controversy during the week of the royal family photograph with, is it Kate? Sorry, I'm not a royalist at all. It's Kate, right?
That is Kate. Yeah.
Kate and she's from Hobart.
No, she's not. That's the one from Denmark.
Oh, sorry. There you go. So that's how little of a royalist I am. She's not from Hobart.
No, she ain't from Hobart. That's,
anyway, let me start that again. Anyway,
that's Princess Mary.
Thank you. So Kate has been under a bit of a health cloud of late, and there hasn't been a lot of news coming out about her condition.
She's dead.
Which, of course, has led to bloody speculation, and, you know, the press like to hound these poor people, as we know only too well. So Kate decided to put out a lovely family photo with her and the three kids, and lovely. Oh, she looks great. Happy Mother's Day. It was Mother's Day in the UK. Hello to all the mums listening from the UK.
Absolutely.
Happy Mother's Day to you for last week.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden,
shit hit the fan.
The shit hit the fan big time, because people started noticing
that the children had two fingers.
There was photoshopping that had been done on these images.
Yes.
And Everywhere. Then the Associated Press put out what they call a kill on the photo, where it had to be taken down.
Yes, that's right.
Now, I think that was their big mistake. I think that's where, you know, by demanding that the photo get pulled, all that did was gave everything oxygen.
Yep.
Now had Princess Kate come out, or even William?
Yeah, William, well, apparently he's her husband. He hasn't really been defending her.
That's right. Well, if they had just come out and said, and they did actually put out a press release or a tweet.
Well, if this is the funny thing about it, right? So I'm not a royal. I can't believe we're talking about royals on this show. This is a classic. We're going to a completely different
level. It's photography related.
Photography. So Princess Kate came out and said something along the lines, as an amateur photographer, I also sometimes edit my images.
That's
blah,
right.
Blah, 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 blah. And I've made a few mistakes
here.
I dabble in Photoshop. Okay, bullshit on that. She's not writing her own tweets. Come on, give me a break. So someone is getting fired over this because they've done a really dodgy Photoshop job. It's just funny how it's gone out of control.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a mountain's been made out of an absolute hill here. However, it does relate back to us as professional photographers and the photography world at large.
Yes.
Insofar as the ethics involved with this. Now, from what I can tell, all that happened was there was a bit of cloning went on. They might have merged two images because the child's smile in this one looked better than that one.
Maybe,
yeah. I mean, that's all I can see. I mean, I think that's probably all that went on. The fact that it was released in the public domain by such a high-profile figure with no disclaimer whatsoever to say that the image had been manipulated, that's where things start getting a bit interesting.
Yes. Well, yeah. Oh, look, I think the whole thing has been hilarious, to be honest. Yeah. Like, one, she doesn't edit her own photos. Two, she didn't take the photo. Three, she didn't write the tweet.
No.
And it's just funny how it's come out. And yeah, like I said, there's been manipulation done to it. There's fingers missing. There's wrists that are off center. There's shadows that are not there. The funniest thing was about the whole thing was that the media, as they do, carry on like a bunch of twats. And they come on and say, oh, no, it's the same photo from the front of this cover. And when they superimpose the head over the photo head, they're like, see, it's classic. It looks exactly the same. Well, one, everyone smiles the same, so duh.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, it's not actually the same head. There's gaps on the chin and stuff like that. So the media's got it wrong.
Yeah.
So, look, it's a funny one, and it has caused a huge poo storm for the royal family.
Yeah.
But it does, again, it comes back to that honesty within a photo. If they come out and said, here's a photo of Kate and the kids on Mother's Day, just be aware there's been a couple of touch-ups done because one of the kids wasn't smiling, their eyes are closed or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It still would have caused a debacle because people would have said, why would you release that? But the fact that they sent it out and went, oh, here, how healthy does she look? She's all good. She's still alive. Everything's happy. And then people just went to town on it. Magnifying glasses out. Well, that's wrong. It was like 15 different spots circled.
Yeah, I saw that. 15 different areas. 15.
And
which is like, amazing to me that an image can make it a publication with 15 errors.
But how can you take a simple portrait and have 15 errors you got to fix?
Yeah, well, that's right.
I'm sure this is why I'm calling BS, because I'm sure Kate didn't get the photo back and go, oh, there's 15 things I need to fix on this photo. No way.
Yeah, and it was funny because I think it was the Petapixel guys or one of those publications decided that they would try and work out what camera it was taken with, and they've published that they think it was done on a Canon 5D Mark III.
Right.
Which is interesting in itself because that's an old, quite an old camera now and quite.
Yeah, but they haven't got money to throw around on camera.
This is true. This is true. Yeah. So Yeah, it was just interesting, but the reason I wanted to bring it up was because what we touched on in our first topic was the ethics behind it, and you know, we keep talking about not wanting AI to take over. We keep talking about, you know, that there should be some control over images. For example, the writers' strike that happened in Hollywood was solved when a contract was if an agreement was reached that, you know, these actors won't be duplicated by AI or their likeness can't be manipulated by AI and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, and that's a multi like billion-dollar agreement, so that actors can keep getting paid.
Mm.
Where's that agreement for us photographers? Like, when you look at things like AI, and in particular the new Sora AI, which is now AI for video, and goodness me, it's amazing what it can do. All these people that rely on photography for their living, it's Dunsky.
Well, we've been banging this drum for over a year now.
Oh, of course we have. We made a t-shirt.
I made a t-shirt. I did. I actually posted something the other morning, which was quite funny. It said, "Good morning to everyone, except those photographers who enter AI photos in contests."
I saw that.
Yeah, that could be a t-shirt too. Yeah. But AI, look, it's got some great things in it, but as with everything, something that's got powerful tools to it, people are going to use it to manipulate what they want and try and make money out of their photos and whatever. And I don't know. I just think we're slowly going down this dark road we didn't want to go down.
Yep.
And every now and then, I actually think the first thing I thought of when I looked at that royal photo that you spoke about, I didn't think about the adjustments I made. The first thing I looked at, I'm like, they all look like their AI. Their eyes look funny. Their eyes look a bit different.
And you know what? I don't know. I saw it pop up on something and didn't give it a second look. And then I saw Photoshop to manipulate. Okay, we'll have another look at the photo. Yeah. And you're right. I thought the same thing too.
Yeah. So
there was some weird shading going on and weird lighting and stuff. And it was
AI is here to stay. We can't do anything about it. But
well, it goes back to that saying or whatever it is. We've gotten so tied up with whether or not we could. We stop to think about whether or not we should.
Should, yeah.
And the genie's out of the bottle. We know
But the thing about photography, and I think there's a lot of ethics that should be in photography and morals that people should have in photography. And the bottom line is with us, whether or not we use it or not.
Yeah.
Like if you go and deliberately AI an image and enter it into competitions to try and win a prize money, then I'm sorry, but you're probably not the greatest person in the world to do that because you're manipulating a photo to try and manipulate a win.
That's right.
So the buck stops with us. If AI is here to stay, then okay, use it for where you might want it. Like I use it for a bit of sharpening and noise reduction. I've got no problem doing that, but I don't try and content aware things or change things. But the decision's on us as photographers. Do we want to keep this thing we love as pure as we can with a few little tools to help, or do we just want to purely go down the line of just press a button and see what happens?
Yeah, I think I said this in like episode 3 that there should be a new category of art, and that is digital art.
Yeah,
it's digital art. It's not photography. If you haven't captured it, you know, analog, if you like, and I understand the irony there. Yeah. If you haven't caught it in real world, then it's not a photograph. So it needs to have its own category of digital art. But unfortunately, those lines have been way too blurred for far too long, and we can't put the genie back in the bottle. So
that's right.
It is what it is. So it's interesting. I love talking about it with other photographers as well, and just getting other people's points of view and perspective on that sort of stuff. I think for me, I'm kind of lucky in what I do because I'm based, you know, in a tourist town in Ocean Grove, and I sell a lot of landscape photos of Ocean Grove. Well, what am I going to do? Photoshopping the 12 apostles on Ocean Grove Beach? Like people.
Here's a thought. Do it. Canvas it. Put it in your front window and see if you sell it.
Yeah, that's right. Someone will go, "Oh, that's amazing."
What lens did you use for that?
Yeah, that's right. It's Ocean Grove. Like people are going to look at it and go, "Hang on, that tree's not there. That sun doesn't set there." Like you'll get called out on it.
I might put like Loch Ness jumping out of the ocean behind me. Or something
that's
like
a good idea. That's a very good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, episode 3, as you mentioned it.
Yeah.
2 years ago, it was what landscape photo equipment do we use? It's had over almost 600 views. It's pretty good.
There you go. That's not bad.
I just looked at some of geez, we look younger.
Well, we should, because every photo of you is younger.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome.
Awesome. I think we'll maybe hold on that next topic.
Yeah, definitely.
For next week. But I just wanted to quickly touch on that. There's a $100 million lawsuit between photographers happening in America at the moment.
Yeah, which makes me laugh so much.
America, sue everyone. So we don't have any gear talk. I don't know. Do you have any gear talk?
No, it's funny. I've jumped on. I still keep in touch with DP Review because I think it's a throwback to my days of, you know, when I was getting into photography.
Sitting at camera house on the work computers trying to pretend busy. Yep.
Yeah, and when someone walks in and they said, "Hey, how many megapixels is this?" Hang on, let me just find out for you.
Yeah, it's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was not a lot of gear being released at the moment, which is kind of interesting.
No, and I haven't got a photography word of the week because I've been lazy.
That's fine. Cameron, you're a busy man. You're traveling around the countryside. You're taking people on awesome tours. What more do we want from you? Except we do have.
Well, before you go there.
Yes.
Next week, I'm away all next week. I'm hiking the Western Arthurs.
That's awesome. So I better get a guest on then.
You better get a guest on. I'm walking with Luke, our other guy from the Overland Track.
Give it up for Luke.
Luke, he's hopefully going to drag me up the Western Arthurs. We've tried that's before.
That's going to be failed. Awesome.
It could be. You know what?
Go on.
I could maybe do an episode from the top because apparently there's phone reception all up the top.
All right. We're going to need 5G.
Maybe.
I want a whole episode with you lit up by Luke's head torch.
All right. You ask, I shall receive. I'll be in touch. But yes, you may need to get a guest on.
We'll find out. That's fine.
We haven't heard back from the guy we asked.
We'll get there.
No one
just like our jingle.
No. Who's doing that jingle again? Who was that?
It's coming. Don't worry. That's on its way.
Are you a listening person that's doing the jingle? I bet you are.
I think they're still waiting on something from me. But anyway, that's fine. Yeah. Rome wasn't built in a day, Cameron. Dear Cam.
Yes.
Dear Cam and Brendan.
All right.
God damn it. I've recently been on a trip to Carnarvon Gorge, nice part of the world, in Queensland. I was mostly happy with my shots, but I think I could have done better with extra work on my exposures. Do you really need to exposure bracket in landscapes? That's from Mick in Toowoomba. Now, I understand why you're buying out Carnarvon Gorge, Mick, because Toowoomba is almost in that neck. Well, it's still quite a drive, but at least you're in the right state.
There's some nice waterfalls there.
Oh, Carnarvon's magnificent part of the world. I went there many moons ago, like 30 years ago.
You know what? It looks a bit like Zion.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, in a much more Aussie way and loads more things that can kill you, but yeah. Brilliant.
We love that. Everything Australian here. All right.
From Toowoomba in Queensland.
Do you need to exposure bracket in landscapes? I don't myself.
I don't either.
So there you go. So that's the answer. No. I think it all depends on what you're shooting, I think. But I think these days with the dynamic ranges of cameras, like we're talking sort of 14 or 15 stops of dynamic range, I don't think you have to. You do need to be conscious of your highlights blowing out and losing sky or waterfall detail. But I think these days you can almost do it in the one shot. Some people like to exposure bracket just so they've got a spray of images they can go back and look at. Some people like to exposure bracket so they can blend and things like that. But I don't do any of that. I would just say, just keep an eye on that histogram and keep an eye on your highlights, making sure they're not clipping.
Yep.
And then you can bring heaps of detail back in your shadows. You can all, you know, most of the times you get in one shot. But when would I use exposure bracketing? Maybe if it was, like I said, a really high dynamic scene with a bright sunset or a sunrise with lots of silhouette or something like that in the foreground, where I just want to make sure that I get that sky and some of the shadow details. But yeah, I think these days it's pretty good what we've got with the technology. Yeah,
it is. And I concur. But the one thing I will say is I think it's not a bad thing to learn how to do, just to have it up your sleeve in case you're confronted with that, you know, that epic once in a lifetime phenomenal sunrise over Tasman Island, and you've got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to walk out and see the sunrise. That's going to get an hour earlier every time I mention it, by the way.
Yeah, we kept walking through the night.
You know, and know what it means. So basically, most cameras now have AEB, auto exposure bracketing, and you can set how many stops of exposure you can have. I think you can get up to 9 stops. And literally, if you put AEB on, you can line up your shot, you can frame up your shot, get your composition right, And you can take the first frame, which will be correctly exposed, and then you can go and it'll automatically do one stop over, one stop under, two stops over, two stops under, three stops over, three stops under, ending with seven different exposures, including one at zero.
Yeah.
Which you can then pick the eyes out of, as Cam said. You've then got all the exposures covered. You've exposed correctly for the sky, you've exposed correctly for the shadows. And then if it is that once in a lifetime shot, and it's your thing that floats your boat, a bit of exposure blending, knock yourself out, make the image. It's a cool thing to know how to do. You may only do it once a year, you might not even do it at all, but I think it's a handy thing to know, and probably a feature inside most cameras that never gets used.
Well, this is the thing as well, like a lot of people go down the lines of, well, there's a feature on this camera, I must have to use it.
Oh, I could not agree more.
And it
frustrates me because they see all the buttons. And
what's
and
this
like,
do?
Well,
what's
it, that do? Well, it does this. It's like, well, just because it's there.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, people just get their cameras and go, oh, that can do this. Oh, I better do that. And then they go down and start Googling, why would you do this? And there's a plethora of information.
Yeah.
And then they come back, oh, I can do this. So I can focus bracket, white balance bracket, exposure bracket. I'll do them all at the same time.
Yeah.
And go through a memory card in one shot. But yeah, like,
and I suppose you can focus bracket. That's called focus stacking nowadays. But you're supposed
There's focus bracking and focus stacking.
That's right. Yeah.
Focus stacking will do it in camera. Focus bracking will just give you the whole lot of files.
So you can do it. Yeah.
There's white balance bracketing. There's ISO bracketing. There's auto exposure bracketing.
Yeah.
Lots of bracketing.
And more importantly than looking at all the settings in your camera. If you get a camera, anything from the last 5 years, and you go into the menu and start going through that menu, it will do your head in. There is so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're exactly right in what you say. People quite often see it and they go, oh, here's a feature, I'm going to use that. But no. What you've got to do is understand what that feature does and then when to use it.
It'd be the same thing as saying, I need to chop down that tree, I'll grab my hammer because there's a hammer there. I better use it.
That's right.
It doesn't work like that. I actually had a funny thing the other day up at Kakadu at Fog Dam. I was out there and it was a bit stormy. That was when I was telling you about the crocodiles. I think the last episode, there's crocodiles around. And I was trying to turn the noise reduction filter off.
Yep.
You know, it does have that black frame over it. I was doing like 30-second exposures trying to get lightning, then waiting 30 seconds for this thing. And I'm going through. And I did exactly that. I went through my menu. I'm like, Jesus, there's a lot of stuff in this menu.
Oh,
scroll. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, where's this crocodile? There's mozzies biting me. There's rain coming in the side. There's lightning out here. I was with my friend Cheryl. I'm like, is she going to get eaten? No, she's okay. Like all these things going on. And I'm like, where the hell is this bloody noise reduction? And then you know what? I couldn't find it. And the storm wasn't that great anyway. I got back in the car, went back. I thought, I'm just going to check. First thing, right in front of me.
Yeah.
But I was under all this pressure around.
That's right. Yeah.
If I just knew my camera a bit better, I would have probably turned it off within seconds. Yeah. So.
And that's where knowing your camera is really important. And I say this at all my entry-level workshops is, you know, one of the last things I say is now, tomorrow night, get your camera out. I don't care if you're sitting on the couch watching TV. Get your camera out. This is the ISO button. This is where I change white balance. This is where I change this, that, and this, so that when you get your moment, and it'll come.
You don't miss it. Yeah, you don't miss it.
Exactly. And you're on, and then the pressure disappears when you know your gear.
Yeah.
It's like public speaking. If you know your subject, then you're fine.
Like this show, like we have a comprehensive run sheet.
Absolutely.
And that's why this runs seamlessly every episode.
Like absolute clockwork, Cameron.
It's funny, isn't it? Like people keep up. That's one of the one things people ask me about the show.
Yeah.
So is it scripted? No, it is not.
Why would it be scripted?
Why would it be scripted?
How can you write this crap?
That's right. I can't even do that.
That's right.
Beer donations.
DSPS.com.au. I don't think I plugged it hard enough last week. Head over to the website DSPS.com.au where you can see loads of stuff. You can see old episodes. You can see beer donation button, which is really important. You can see all our workshops, of course, which we've got coming up. And if you feel like it, jump on and buy us a beer if you want to. No pressure. We'd appreciate
it. Better,
you
know, even better, jump on and buy a workshop.
That's right.
And we'll buy you a beer. So beer donations this week. It's been a bit quiet on the beer front.
That's all right.
Mallory's back. She's donated another. I mean, he's donated another one.
Thank you, Mel.
Thank you, Mel. Thank you for telling me why Mel actually gave. There's no secrets on this show, Mel.
There's not. Well done, Mel. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And like we said, the workshops.
Yes.
Are we telling people about the Mallee workshop, Cameron?
We can, yeah. The Murray Mallee workshop, which was set to go in October. Hopefully no one's going to get disappointed about this, but we haven't had anyone book in, which is good. Bad, good, but you know.
Yeah, you'll see why it's good.
You see, but we're going to move that back into March 2025 just to... Yes. That part of the year for Brendan and I was just becoming a little bit stupid with the amount of things we're doing.
A bit crammed.
So we thought to give you guys the best of us, where our eyeballs are not hanging out on our cheekbones and we're over workshops, we're going to push it back to the 28th of March, did we say?
Yep.
28th of March to the 1st of April, I think it was.
Yes.
Next year. So
2025. So
2025, yeah. 21st to the... Yeah, sorry. Where am I? Yeah,
yep.
You know what I mean.
28th. We'll
put it out there. 28th to the 1st of April.
Yeah.
Jesus. But that'll be updated on the website before this episode goes out. But
yes, which is linked in the description as well.
Yeah, I think it just gives people a bit more time to plan. But it also, it was going to get a bit crazy for us at that time of year, which we don't really want to do that. We're not in this business to get busy, are we, really?
No. We have said about this little show from the get-go. The moment it feels like work, we stop doing it. So it certainly still does not feel like work. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Coming up, I've got this golf course that I'm photographing, and I'm having an absolute ball doing it. It's really surprised me.
Pun intended.
Yeah, true. I went out there again with the long lens and chasing some cool shots, and so far so good. I'm really happy with the results. Tomorrow night, I'm doing the greens from the air with the drone, so that'll be fun. So I'll go out and shoot all the greens.
Not having a chopper.
Get to the chopper. No, I'm going to do it the nice and quiet way and not wake all the neighbors or keep the neighbors up all night and just get my drone up instead and sound like a giant mosquito.
So when you're doing that, are you doing that afternoon light or morning light, did you say? Or?
Well, I ideally would like to shoot it around midday, with less shadows. Shoot it because I'll be doing it straight down. Right. These are literally bird's eye view straight down on top of the green.
Yes.
So the less shadowing, the better for those kind of shots, but then for the more inviting ambient shots, then I've already shot quite a good series at sunset.
Right.
The Ocean Grove Golf Course, basically the majority of it faces west, faces the sunset. Right. So I mean, the holes run north south, but off to the west is where the view is. If you look to the east, you got the town of Ocean Grove and a few hills which sort of obscure a sunrise, so it really lends itself to sunset shooting. But as I say, shoot the aerial stuff straight down at the middle of the day.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and also the video flybys of each hole as well. So that'll be, I don't know if I'll get into that tomorrow, but it'll be certainly something that we do. Probably looking to get a bit of rain on the course. The greens look fantastic, but the fairways are starting to brown off quite a bit.
I was just thinking that. Will you touch up the fairways and greens and shots?
There'll be a couple of spots where we'll just need to because they've got ground under repair, which is the same with all golf courses. They're always bloody digging up stuff and putting in irrigation and all this sort of stuff. So there'll be a bit of touch-up work, but...
Yep.
Majority of it will be shot. The aerial stuff will be shot when it greens up a bit. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we get our normal autumn rains that we tend to get here.
Are you going to do some cool fly through the trees and sort of...
No.
Like, you know, when it comes and... No?
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. You should. That'd be cool.
I'll see. And then we're shooting in the clubhouse as well. So we're doing a few... Just going to do a few shots... you know, of the meals that they serve there and, you know, a few shots of some cold beer, which I might have to sample, all that sort of stuff.
Surely you'd get some for free, wouldn't you?
I totally digress. Cameron, you're off to the Southwest again. I think we already said that.
Yes, I am. Tomorrow I head off. Another little 2-night, 3-day camp down to the Southwest.
Tomorrow, which is 3 days ago.
Yeah, I'm back already. Yeah, how was it? Right. It was great. Yeah, I had a great time. Got some great shots.
The magic of YouTube and the interweb.
We could almost do another episode later this week for next week if you wanted to.
Goodness.
So yeah, I'm off to there. Really looking forward to it. It's a really good trip. So far,
The photos you got first time around were crappy.
But it's every trip is the same. Like every time we go there, it's something awesome happens. So
this is the one that you reckon I have to come on with you.
Yeah, I think you do. We can share a tent. That's okay. Or a glamping tent. What I am doing this time though, because I've got so many awesome customers coming, usually on this trip, I get couples. So usually there's a photographer in it because it's a short trip. there's a husband or wife who wants to do photos, and the other partner just comes along for a couple of days off, and they share one of the, there's three double bed glamping tents. This trip is all single people. So that means that I don't actually get a glamping tent. I'm actually camping in the forest where we are, which is okay. I don't,
brilliant.
I'm happy to do that. But it's the first time I'm like, oh, I don't get a nice little cabin. That's okay. I'll take one for the team type of thing.
Yep.
But it is a great, it's a great trip and lots of fun. And the guys that run at Par Avion, the camp guides, they're just legends. So I think we've got the same guys we had a couple of weeks ago. So we had a lot of laughs. Yeah. So looking forward to that.
You'll get to ride the light plane roller coaster again.
Yeah. Well, I know a couple of the pilots that I didn't, the pilot last time I didn't know, but hopefully tomorrow we'll get one because, yeah, it should be fun. And then I get back and then I'm off to Queenstown.
Yep.
To do a little bit of a secret mission photo shoot for my good friends at Tourism Tasmania. Asterix.
Back in that, the good books. Nice.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I've been asked to do a photo shoot. And it's really cool. It's Tassie Tourism do what's called the off-season. So it's like all the winter tourism attractions in winter down here in Tassie.
Yep.
And there's one out on the West Coast that I've been asked to come and do a couple of workshops for in the winter. But we're going to go out tomorrow on Friday and do a promo shoot for it. But it gives us access to some really cool behind the scenes thing of a very popular attraction out there. So stay tuned for that.
Watch this space.
Could be pretty cool. Yeah.
Will be. Very good. All right. Nice. Busy. Well, you enjoy yourself in the Southwest. Stay safe out there.
I might send you a GPS message from the middle of nowhere.
Lovely. That would be great. Congratulations to Tasmania on getting their AFL team,
yes,
which was announced tonight before we went to air.
Yes.
The Tasmanian. Now, it's interesting. It's Tasmania Devils, not Tasmanian Devils.
Yes, I saw that. Everyone's saying why? The same. Why? Because it's Tasmania. I don't know why.
There's obviously, is that the copyright thing?
No, but Warner Brothers gave the okay for it. So,
okay.
I'm not too sure if that's just a...
Why does an American company own the rights to the Tasmanian Devil, for Christ's sake?
That is a very, very good question. I don't know.
They also own Vegemite, so what's it matter?
Do they?
Kraft.
Not Warner Brothers.
No. Not Warner Brothers. An American company owns Vegemite, I think.
I'm like, why the hell would Warner be with you? I don't know. I think hopefully it'll change. But we'll have to wait and see. But cool, it's going to be fun. I've already signed up as a founding member, so I'll be joining. I used to be a member of Hawthorn, but I don't anymore. Mm-hmm. But I'll actively support this team. I'll still go for Hawthorn, but it'll be good to have a second team. And
I will most definitely be coming down when the Demons take on the Devils.
Demons.
It already sounds like a rivalry, doesn't it?
It does. That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So looking forward to that. This has been episode 115 of the Down South Photo Show. Thanks for listening along. We will catch you for episode 116, possibly next week, maybe the week after, but who knows?
Enjoy
yourselves.
We'll come back on air when we reach 800 subs.
That's right.
Yeah. Until then, we're not coming back on.
Enjoy yourselves and happy photography, everyone. See you. Bye.
Happy photographer, buddy.
happy photographering.
Right.
Photographing.
Okay. Yeah. What a way to finish that episode.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.